Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show, focused on managing your business, financing, and marketing your small business. Over the Blog Talk Radio Network. Tim Jacquet, your host. Our guest today is Terrain Shaw, author of Venture Capitalist at Work. He has been a venture capitalist with SoftBank. A lot of people have heard of them. And if you have any questions, you can post your questions to Mr. Shaw in the chat room, or you can do hashtag Apple Capital, or you feel free to call in at 347-324-3460. Terrain, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me. Yeah.
Great. I really appreciate it. I saw your presentation, slideshow, and I said, hey, I had to get this person on the show because everybody was always talking, what venture capitalists, who are they, what they look for, and I saw your book and then went through your book and said, hey, this is a perfect fit. We really need to have him on the show. And I really appreciate you taking the time coming on to the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. No, this really, all the research we have done is with an intention to help small businesses and entrepreneurs and, you know, any platform we can reach out to those key individuals who are changing the way our economy runs and how customers consume the products and services. I mean, I'm all for it. So thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Kind of, let's backtrack for a second. Kind of tell us about yourself, and then we'll talk about what is a venture capitalist and what they actually do.
Oh, good question. So a little bit about myself. A double E MBA, and a lot of focus on understanding, you know, the success characteristics of small and private businesses and startups. So a lot of focus in my research over the last 10, 15 years, especially last 10 years, where I started looking at startups from, you know, public kind of Wall Street type of analysis perspective and posed that question to me and my partner who co-authored this book with me. And we were wondering, you know, how come we can't apply similar rigorous public company kind of Wall Street type of analysis methodology to understand the potential of small companies and startups. And that kind of led to the research, and some part of that is in the book that we are saying. But it's still a much more research effort that's still going on, and we plan to get a couple additional books out of that, yeah. So that's kind of a little bit about myself and the focus. And, you know, I've been in various positions with Fortune 100 companies, you know, from marketing to product management to innovation executive, and most importantly, 5 years as venture capitalist. And I advise, you know, dozen plus companies, been on the board, help with 8 different investments of around $50 million. So real focus is on, you know, investing in startups, understanding why some companies succeed versus a lot of other small companies fail, and what can we learn from those successes and failures that we can apply to current businesses and businesses which are yet to be incubated, and they can improve their chances of success from all this past learning. So that remains our key passion and focus. Yeah.
Okay. I know there's been a lot of stories and a lot of reality shows. I think the industry, by supplying them, because you've actually, within this past decade, we've seen some businesses from nobody knew of and really have migrated to multi-billion-dollar businesses. I mean, it's just a dream come true when it comes to a venture capitalist. And then you have, you know, we had the advent of Facebook, going public, and many other companies who's going public that we've been knowing for years as a brand, and all of a sudden these little small brands from nothing are worth, I mean, multi-billion dollars, and it's just really amazing that the venture capitalists play such an important part of this whole process of the life of a company, from the person who spent their last dime to get it started, to the innovation, the ideas, and all of a sudden now want to look for capital, and they only have a few options to go here, go public, or go to a venture capitalist to help them go through that process. What venture capitalists normally look for in identifying a business?
Well, it's really, I would say it's a trillion-dollar question, right? Because, you know, a lot of small entrepreneurs too, and every entrepreneur kind of start out as a small entrepreneur, as a team of just sometimes himself or herself, mm-hmm. or a couple individuals coming together. And each of them is wondering, you know, what is the best way to grow this business? So there are multiple ways to think about it. If you are a small business or a mom-and-pop retail shop, you know, most of the time, you know, you will go for a bank loan or something, but you won't have access to venture capital. So I think the distinction one has to make between different sources of capital, the primary one being, you know, the bank loan for small businesses, the most important one, especially for the emerging technology businesses, will be venture capital. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as you go further in the process of building your company, private equity groups come in, which are kind of venture capitalists, but they run more like public company or hedge fund investments rather than venture mm-hmm. capital investments. And then, of course, there is a public market. Once company gets to a certain size, you can definitely go for IPO. So the distinction for entrepreneurs and small business owners I'd like to make here is that venture capitalists really focus on businesses which are, though they are nascent or looking small today, they are attacking a huge problem. If it's done right, it can turn into a billion-dollar opportunity, as you talked about, or a billion-dollar business, right? So then your next question is, you know, what do they look for? And I think that I partly answered the question. So if you go through all the research and even the best in the business, we'll talk about this, that best businesses like Facebook and Groupon and whatnot we have seen recently from early days of businesses like Apple to Microsoft, all of these businesses were built at what we call a cross-section of, you know, great market colliding with great team. And, you know, a lot of people will say, yes, I mean, anything you do in emerging technology is a great market. But there are fine nuances that venture capitalists understand in terms of what creates the next big market, right? So, you know, let's say if you were to look at someone like Netflix in early days where, you know, Blockbuster was the real player, you know, one has to really ask the question as to, is there a market for someone like Netflix? And at that time, most people won't even know that Netflix does exist. It will be such a small company that no one will know about. And at that time, you know, as a venture capitalist, you look at existing market, you ask yourself a question as to, is there a room to disrupt existing market? And if you can disrupt, what would you disrupt that with? And if you disrupt or you find that solution to disrupt it with, would you be able to create 10 times advantage over the current service? Or there is such a huge pain in the current service provided by someone like Blockbuster that you can solve this pain in a very meaningful way and in a very cost-efficient way, right? So mm-hmm. at 10,000 feet, it's very easy to say, yes, you know, cloud computing is a big market or mobile is a big market. I mean, everyone on the street understands that, or the main street understands that. But venture capitalists are specific specifically interested in within that, huge opportunity that generally recognized by everyone, are there fine nuances that one can focus on that can create, multi-billion-dollar opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So then specifically you ask a question as to how do you do that? And the way to do that is, I think this is where one's domain expertise comes into play. And mm-hmm. so a lot of these individuals come into venture business having been entrepreneur before, very successful entrepreneur, sold their companies or built their companies to a huge amount, so they understand the whole process of how do you build something from scratch all the way to a couple hundred million to $1 billion company, right? So they have very good understanding of that. But most importantly, when they've done this in trenches to build that, they've gotten very specific knowledge of the sector they operate in. And again, the sector keeps evolving, like mobile used to be much different before, let's say, launch of iPhone. Mm-hmm. And even 5 years before, early days when I was with Qualcomm, wireless looked very different. I mean, I remember holding the first kind of, smartphone that Qualcomm made, and it looked much different than what you see today. I mean, it looked like a brick, in fact, right? So mm-hmm. the market keeps evolving, but your understanding of customer, what problem it solves for the customer, how the technology roadmap is evolving, what players are doing what to disrupt or enhance that roadmap, and what sort of opportunities does that create once you hit certain critical mass. I mean, that requires a very specific domain expertise, right? So mm-hmm. I think the first thing what venture capitalists look at is, and I wanted to give you this background so understand where this individual
sure.
comes
from. Sure, it's helping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So based on their domain expertise, they have certain understanding that if following factors kind of add up, then it may create opportunity in this area. And, in the book, I have interviewed, Sequoia Capital partner Ruloff, and Ruloff was main investor in YouTube. And it's a great example I also put in the presentation that mm-hmm. how do you look at the market or know that this particular slice of the market is ready for picking? And the way you do that is, the promising markets kind of add up by a couple of pieces coming together. So first and foremost is you're looking at, some sort of behavioral change happening in customers. It could be business customers or your regular consumers. So I think that's a very important thing to understand, that most of the people who can stay on the cutting edge of understanding how consumers are changing their behavior are very much tuned into what could be the next business that can leverage that change of behavior. So that
okay.
means you're looking at kind of latest fads, fashions, you're looking at, what's kind of becoming quote-unquote hot. So, I remember early days when, IM was so popular, right? Instant messaging and, web email became very popular and that gave rise to Hotmail. And all of those kind of fashions, or fads come in waves. And you have to be kind of at the beginning of that wave to know that something is peaking, right? So you got to be a very good student of, of consumer behavior or changing the consumer behavior or taste, right?
Okay.
So that's kind of the one thing. Then you have to look at that and say, is this change of behavior or change of taste, is it going to last? Or this is something that, some groups kind of try it out. It's kind of, flavor of the day or week or month or a year, and then it will fade out, and a lot of those things have happened. So you have to have a very specific way to look at something and say, is this behavior pointing to fundamental shift in how people will behave in the future? Well, this is something, just a small blip you are seeing, and those blips come and go. And so mm-hmm. the smart investors really kind of try to draw some parallels. So in case of YouTube, before U.S. got this advanced with internet and broadband penetration and wireless penetration, the two markets in the world which were quite ahead of us were Japan and Korea, South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And just the small geography, a very homogeneous population, mostly city-like environment, major city-like environments, yeah, and not that much rural or distribution between metro, suburb, and rural. It's just so highly homogeneous societies, very small geographies. And they were able to get to a much higher level of broadband penetration very quickly. And based on that high bandwidth coming into home combined with high PC penetration per capita, they were able to see what type of applications and content get consumed once the country passes certain critical mass in terms of bandwidth usage or the speed at which data can be transferred. So smart investors, especially in this case, Sequoia, was studying that behavior. And so U.S. is getting to that kind of critical mass in terms of, home broadband penetration. And so that definitely tells you that, infrastructure that supports that kind of change of behavior is getting deployed. So that's kind of one thing you look at and say, is there supporting infrastructure that needs to be embedded on which this type of applications can ride, or this kind of new behavior can ride? And this infrastructure investment goes, it changes the whole economy in general. It's
mm-hmm.
not done for, just done today and like a circus stand taken out in a couple of days. I mean, it's a billions and billions of dollars of investment to build that kind of infrastructure. So you know that kind of investment won't be made unless there is a perceived need and economic return on it. So
Okay, so how would a venture capitalist know if there's perceived need? With the research that's out there, for example, I remember going back to what you mentioned top of the hour about Blockbuster, and when they first came out in the mid-80s, Wall Street said, this company never will last, because they never had any assets. They had tons of cash. 25 years later, it finally played out. But that was something new. I remember video cassettes were $90, and now you can rent them for like $2 or $3 and so forth. With things like that, like YouTube, the Facebook, how a venture capitalist would know when you have these cutting-edge technologies coming on board, how will they know, hey, this is a good fit or not? This is something that we're on the verge of, and let's dive into this and go forward.
Yeah, no, it's a very good question. I think, So the short answer is you don't always know that going in, So there is no surefire way to know that this is going to be 100% right. And all you can do is increase your chances of being right. And so just the nature of venture capital business is that a lot of your investments will fail. I mean, many of them can take all your money. Some of them will return some money back. But there will be few that will return you astronomical or supposed to return you astronomical returns that will more than pay for all your losses and on top of that make you 2-5x return, depending on how well those top ones did, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think the failure is naturally understood and accepted part of venture capital process. But you want to be right more than wrong, and that's when you can in aggregate return more value out of your fund. So that's kind of the natural process. And because all based on innovation, and innovation is not a surefire way to know what will stick and what won't, but it's just an experiment, right? But you
mm-hmm.
have to put right pieces together and do right analysis to know that, there is within your portfolio, there is a better chance of being right than wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many of these investments done early on, people didn't have idea that this is going to be this big. But how do you know that, you know, instead of putting into five other trends, you put in this trend? I think there are a lot of signs that point to it. So if you take the YouTube example, the broadband penetration and PC penetration just becoming a natural extension of people's life or natural part of people's life was definitely one. And then you look at, you know, the camcorder prices were coming down significantly, and possibility or rather probability of people having, you know, combination of PC at home and high bandwidth pipeline coming into home plus having handheld camcorder was just kind of going up. So there was real investment happening by the customers, and that's what you look at. You look at say, hey, are your customers or potential customers really investing, quote-unquote, either their time or their money into the taste or change of behavior? I think that's one of the proofs that VCs look for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So people were investing in camcorders. Camcorder prices were coming down to a point where you know that this is going to be a mass market phenomenon. And then you know that with PC and broadband, this is type of application, video could be type of application that can ride on that network, and then with camcorder you can capture that, right? So those combinations kind of tell you that there is a high probability, there is again no surefire way to know this, but there is a very high probability that combination of these factors can point to that change in behavior. Now, you know, the social networking phenomenon, talking about Facebook, has been tried many, many times before, even Facebook was launched in 2005. In fact, I think it was late 90s that the first, you know, first social networking companies were launched, and, you know, a lot of those kind of failed because, again, there has to be right combination of things. There has to be, you know, few things had to be played out, like web email, that people email to each other, build kind of virtual, you know, groups and communicate with each other, then instant messaging where people are comfortable sharing real time, talking to the other person on the other side of the world, you know, and many of those things had to play out to kind of build the foundation for people to build virtual communities online. And there a lot of experiments were done, including Friendster, which kind of failed for a couple of reasons, mostly technological reasons and strategic reasons. And I think Facebook was launched 5-6 years after some of the first social networks came about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, so this venture capitalist have seen, you know, which one failed and why they failed, and is there a flavor that can do this right and kind of go after that. Now, again, when Peter Thiel invested in Facebook early on, he invested really in Mark Zuckerberg, right? So that brings us to the second point, but let me finish up the market side and we go to the people side of investment. And it's usually the right combination of the two that gives you great outcome eventually. But on the market side, you have to have a domain expertise to understand the fine difference between, you know, the where market is market going to be there tomorrow, where market has been, how it has changed, what are fundamental supporting or enabling technologies and infrastructure are in place or getting in place. I mean, and think about it. If before 3G, you know, ubiquitous availability of 3G wireless in U.S., if Apple had launched iPhone, I mean, it would have been like, you know, Palm's Newton. Remember the early days when they launched, you know, Newton, the first kind of handheld PDA? Didn't really go anywhere, right? I mean, PayPal wanted to do, you know, mobile payment over it from smartphone to smartphone. It was a great idea, but it was 10 years before its time because there wasn't any infrastructure to ride it on, you know? So I think the smart investors understand that for something to be accepted as a critical mass, or a general service, what components need to be in place? Does that help?
Yeah, it makes absolutely sense. It really does.
Yeah, and then I mean, to your question on Blockbuster, a lot of times you have to ask yourself what kind of player you are. So Blockbuster can never make their own movies, and you have to understand that who owns the content, right? And, you know, Apple was very smart when they launched iTunes to understand what kind of problems the labels were facing, music labels were facing, and can it take the whole album, you know, split it into a track and sell each track for 99 cents and, you know, kind of gives, you know, good money back to the label. I mean, those were all innovative ideas as to you look at content at one end and how do you distribute the content to the customer? And is there a better way to do that? So Blockbuster tried to do that in a retail fashion, so it was purely a distribution play. And what Netflix did was just leverage the power of internet and optimized, you know, logistics using snail mail. But it was able to, again, disrupt the distribution. So there was no other magic than leveraging, you know, distribution in a different way and using power of internet. And now, you know, they were facing the same problem. If someone can come in and say, can I distribute the same content or, you know, fat data pipes that are coming into people's homes now using cable, satellite, or just, you know, pure old DSL. And they have to be quite aggressive in, quote-unquote, cannibalizing themselves in a way, right, where they started offering the service, the streaming service online. If they don't do this, someone else is going to do it. So as a smart business, you have to recognize this very early on. I mean, think of Google. You know, Google is a master of online advertising, but they missed the whole trend in the mobile advertising, and they didn't realize, you know, what will it take to be number one player there. So those disruptions keep coming in, and then they ended up acquiring AdMob for $750 million because that company just grew right under their nose and did exactly what Google did on online. The way they disrupted advertising using online advertising, this company, AdMob, disrupted mobile advertising or online advertising using mobile. And so either you have to be proactive in understanding the next disruption that is coming, or, you know, you can really become thing of the past like Blockbuster has become or Circuit City has become in face of Amazon, right? So I think
absolutely.
The net here is understanding the markets you are in and understanding the current of the market becomes very critical as an existing business or as an investor, venture investor wants to get in that business, right? So that's kind of the market side of it. And then the most important thing when you invest in a company as a venture capitalist, you know, so a lot of folks may be kind of wondering and might have been through that experience. They go to venture capitalist and they say, hey, you know, this is a great company or great product I have, and you can make so much money if you just give me $1 million or $5 million. And, you know, and both of us can get very rich if this really happens, right? So when you approach venture capitalists, they have pretty good sense of, you know, how big the room you are dealing with, and room being an analogy for the market. And they have a pretty good sense of what the ceiling is going to be in that room and how much oxygen is going to be in that room. So, you know, if you go in and say, you know, it's a small room, but with me owning 10% of the market, there's enough for us to make a $100 million company, that doesn't pass muster of most VCs. I mean, they're looking for, you know, a $1 billion opportunity that hasn't been even touched yet. And there is hardly any ceiling you can put on that room, you know. So
I follow.
Right. So what that means is, really, you want to really go after solving rather big problems, big pains, rather than say I can help you make 2-3 times your money. They are not interested in that, you know. Because there's so much risk to get to that 2-3x return. By the time you get to that, it's kind of, it may not be there, you know. So you want to go in with something that has 100 times return potential on your money, and you may end up with 3x, 5x if you do it right, you know. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a station break for a second. Again, I have Chang Sha Shaw, which is a venture capitalist at work, his book, that is available on Amazon. We're going to take a station break for a second. Again, Tim Jacquet with the Core Business Show.
You're listening to the Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com.
Again, Tim Jacquet, welcome back to the Core Business Show. Today we have, again, Tarang Shaw, who is the author of Venture Capitalists at Work. A couple of questions is coming through the stream right now. One is, how do you know your company is ready for a venture capitalist? And then number two of that question, another person is asking, how should you prepare yourself for a venture capitalist?
Good question. Very good question. So I think, when do you know you are ready for venture capital funding? And I think there are a couple kind of stages of your funding. So initially, you know, you got to look at your product, and let's say it's a software product, and nowadays, so if you're building kind of consumer internet product, something, let's say a website that allows, you know, dog owners to become a community, or just take an example like that, you know, it's pretty easy to build something like that for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, and if you are a good web developer, you can even cut that cost by doing some of the development yourself, right? So nowadays, to come out of with a product is not that difficult, especially if you're building an online product or a mobile app or something like that. But if you're building kind of robust enterprise-level software, then you may need a couple hundred thousand to get to a pilot or something. So I think the first thing you need to do is understand how much money you will need to get to something concrete. You can yourself test it out a little bit with alpha testing, or if you could, with beta testing. Look at some early key metrics and know that there is some proof that proverbial dog will eat the dog food, or is interested in eating this dog food, right? I mean, that's kind of... So the first order of business is to know how much money you would need. Now, let's say you concluded you need $50,000 to $100,000, and most people at that stage don't reach out to venture capitalists, but they reach out to someone called Angel Group. And angels are wealthy individuals who have... you know, either have had history of past successes themselves as small entrepreneurs, or, you know, they are representing other wealthy investors in a small fund and investing on their behalf. And usually they put somewhere from $50,000 to $200,000 to a couple hundred thousand dollars, depending on the opportunity. So you want to reach out to, in your community, usually there is a small angel group, and now there are a lot of online groups like AngelList and a few others that you can... You know, put your business plan there for that kind of small funding. So I think the first order of business is for you to understand what will it take for me to get to that initial understanding or a pilot, and how much money will I need, how much money I will need, right? And then your business is like within those categories, but something that can scale very rapidly if you had access to more money. And there is a next group called Super Angels. And Super Angels can invest somewhere from $250,000 to $1 million, and or either, you know, one group by itself, or in a syndicate of couple groups, and they can get your business to get to a pretty high scale. I mean, if you have mobile or social networking kind of company nowadays that can scale very rapidly. Something like Pinterest and others have kind of scaled on a very little money, right? So it's just really your product can be so viral that you just have to put some initial money in getting the product right, and then it really takes a life of its own. And those kind of cases, you may want to reach out to super angels. And then after that, this is again called seed investment. And after you've proven some key metrics with your seed investment, you're ready for, you know, $2-5 million Series A round, which will be your first kind of VC round or institutional round. So how do you know you are ready is, I think, you just have pretty good feel for your customers, the solution that you're targeting customers' pain point with, and having some initial what we call a product market fit. So you have a good sense of this particular solution is addressing this particular pain point or interest of the customer, and have initial proof that, you know, it's really working. And, of course, you will need a lot of tweaking and turning eventually to get it right, but you have pretty good initial comfort that you can have a deep dialogue with someone, you know, with the investor. I think that's when you know you are ready. Yeah. And Tim, what was the question? Yeah.
The other question is how should you prepare, and which you talked about a few seconds ago. Once you have your plan together, you've now in that next stage or that next phase, you're in the multi-million dollar range you're looking into. What should you do in your proposal? I'm assuming that's what she's asking for, and how should you present yourself, because you only have a one-shot opportunity. So you've got to look. Yeah, you got to look the part, you got to fill the part, and you got to really sell the part because you only have one shot.
Yeah.
So what they need to have in their hand when the venture capitalists say, yes, I'll meet with you. Isn't a panel or so forth? Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So it's, again, very good question. And yes, and the fact is you only get one shot, you know. In some cases, if you everything else adds up, but you are still early, then, of course, they want to track it and we'll call you back once you have those metrics kind of looking good. But usually you got one shot. And so you want to be extremely prepared, and I think that's the right concern for any entrepreneur approaching a VC. So here are some pointers I can give to you. The one is, you know, most of the VCs respond to or investors respond to a query or a business plan that's coming from, you know, a trusted source. So what that means is, you know, most of the business plans which are submitted online, you know, someone may review them, but probability of them really getting attention is quite low. So I think your first order of business is to find out, you know, find an advisor who is very well connected in the startup and venture and entrepreneurial community, who may know number of investors, how they think, which investor has which domain expertise, where your business plan may resonate very well. I think you want to do that homework and get that kind of person on board as an advisor, because that person is going to first kind of do his or her sniff test to make sure that you have something of a value that, you know, he or she can pass it on to the network, where without losing credibility or coming across like someone who hasn't vetted that deal, right? So you kind of get the first sniff test by working with a seasoned advisor who knows or has networked well in the venture community. And once that person sends out the business plan, the chances of other side looking at it and giving it the due attention is quite high. So I think the first order of being prepared is to find the group of advisors that not only can help you on a product side or opening doors to customer channels, but can also help you, you know, understand how the investment world works, and someone who is well connected to kind of carry you through. Now, if you're a known entrepreneur who has done this in the past, I mean, good likelihood you know the investors and you know what they're looking for. So that's a different story. But I think for most first-time entrepreneurs, don't underestimate the value of having a seasoned advisor on your board, right? That's number one. In terms of specifically with that, let's say now you have that, now you got attention or you got a channel to which your business plan will go through, and it will get attention on the other side. And then usually they ask you for one pager or two pager, and I would rather prefer a two pager that tells you the following things. Of course, it lists the basic things like, you know, where are you based and if you have raised any money or not, or, you know, stuff like that. But most importantly, you want to talk about, you know, the following things. One being your understanding of the customer problem, right? I mean, it's all about, you know, how well you understand your customer and your market, and which we call authenticity. So if you talk about, let's say, starting a dog spa business or a mobile dog spa business, you know, it should start with things like, you know, as a kid you have been with three dogs and you know exactly when dogs need to be bathed and, you know, what they love and what they don't love, and just you spent your whole life thinking about, you know, what dogs love to get and not. Or if you are a consumer online or a mobile app developer, you're constantly thinking about, you know, whatever app you're thinking about, say, you know, how do you disrupt the, how do you get people the best deals on hotels based on their location, wherever they are, right? I mean, whatever, whatever you're thinking about as your business, you have to have show a deep domain understanding that you are putting your 10,000 hours that makes you believe that this is the problem your customers are facing.
Okay.
How did you get that understanding? And then that authenticity should come through in a paragraph or two. So that's most important, right? What brings you to believe that this is the problem that needs to be solved? And why are you the right person to solve it? Very important, right?
Okay, great.
I think the second thing you should have in there is a description on the product itself. You say, hey, this is the problem. Now, this is the solution. And then talk about the solution that's pretty easy to understand, not technical. You know, just talk in a layman's term or customer's term as to what does it really get to the customer. And your product should speak to not just kind of bells and whistles or all the features, but really how does it address the problem that customer you identified in the earlier paragraphs the customer is facing. And so you're really referring to value proposition, right? What is a value proposition?
Value proper. Wow.
Right? So that's kind of the second thing. The third thing you need to have is, you know, your kind of competitive understanding. And in all the business plans I have seen, there are a few that really stand out, where they have very good understanding of their competitive landscape. Most people will say, yeah, we are the only guy who can do this, or there are so many guys, but we can do better. I think those are pretty standard answers, but the depth of your understanding, they listen. I mean, you know, Joe's kind of mobile dog spa, you know, has kind of its own rental vans, and, you know, they only do these geographies, and they are missing out on this kind of, you know, middle-class geographies in these suburbs, and these are the reasons they can't get in there, but this is reasons why I have access to this, you know, and I can protect this, I can build it before anyone can think of coming in. I mean, you got to really kind of now start combining your understanding of the customer, understanding of, you know, their problem, understanding of your own product solution and how that fits the pain point. And now why you would be the only person who can do in this way, or maybe one of the two, three guys who can do this, but within that how you can carve out and protect your position, right? So,
absolutely.
And those three things should come across very, very well. And then with that, you want to a little bit talk about the team, which is very important. You, yourself, a couple other guys on your team, you know, what is your vision? What makes them so passionate to solve this problem, or they think this is they all lost their jobs and they thought they need to do something together and this is where they can make money? I think no one likes that answer. Even in, you know, I think you should do things which are so genuinely passionate, you feel so genuinely passionate about, that initially not thinking so much about money, but just solving that problem for the customer in a way no one else can do. And that passion, you know, that passion you should see if you read through biographies of Steve Jobs, to Mark Zuckerberg, or Bill Gates, any of those, or Howard Hughes, or any of those successful entrepreneurs. you know, they have that thing going where they say, I understand my customer's problem, I know how I can help them, and I'm so passionate that I can't think of doing anything else in my life but just this. And you ask them a question, what if you fail? They say, you know, I don't even think that, but I'm just going to succeed. That's the only calling they have. And that should come across, right? Because, you know, here, someone is trusting their money, and usually it may not be their money. I mean, VCs invest on behalf of pension funds and, you know, endowment trust and a lot of other people. So they have been trusted as a general partners to manage someone else's money, and they are interested in minimizing the risk and increasing their return. And you help them do that because you are one so committed about the business you are going after, and that has to jump out of your presentation or your two-pager write-up, where they say, man, this person, this girl is so passionate, she's not going to rest until she makes this dog spa business the number one franchise brand in the U.S., you know, and that kind of commitment, passion should ooze out of your presentation, and that has to tie down to your background. It's, you cannot just one fine day come up with the idea like this. You know, a lot of things in your life has to transpire to get you to this idea. And you should a little bit talk about that, what brings you to this idea. You know, your past experiences, your love for dogs, or, you know, your love for, you know, traveling and the problems you face yourself in finding, you know, the best hotel prices with the right features. I mean, whatever the problem you're solving, you should be able to get to that combination, right? And after that, you a little bit talk about kind of business model. A lot of times it may be too early to exactly know, you know, how will you monetize it, but you should talk about, so initially, let's say I'll give this app for free. It's a freemium model, and, you know, if customers really want to use for this many times a month, or, you know, they do transactions more than this many dollars, then I'll get this much percentage. Or in a standard small business like dog spa, mobile dog spa, you will say, hey, you know, we'll charge this many dollars per small dog, this many dollars per a cat, and whatnot, right? I mean, it's just whatever business, some businesses, business models are known early on. I mean, companies like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, I mean, business models were not known for many, many years into the business, and that's okay as long as there are other key metrics which can show, you know, that you will be making a noticeable progress. Yeah.
Great. I mean, another question here, which is kind of cute, is regarding Shark. So, for example, the show that comes on the local network regarding the sharks coming out and people, yeah, who's making a business owners making presentations, is that really realistic behavior to an investor for venture capitalists if they're sitting there, a group of them, and is that just Hollywood, or is kind of, yeah, maybe 30% of it, yeah, that's how it works, or it really doesn't?
Well, I mean, I won't necessarily call them venture capitalists, you know, because
okay,
those guys are investing their own money. I mean, Mark Cuban to, you know, all of those guys, you know, they are investing their own money. So they are not really a venture capital fund, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the behavior you see in there, how they are kind of, you know, very direct or sometimes even rude to the, you know, inventors or entrepreneurs and all that, I think that is a lot of Hollywood element in it. So mm-hmm. when you go to a seasoned entrepreneurs, well-known VCs, or other seasoned investors or well-known VCs, they are very methodical, majority of them are, in how they deal with you. They're very systematic in telling you what they're thinking and what they need from you to get to the next stage and whatnot. So the behavior you see there, I think, is some elements of kind of drama created just because TV networks have to have some kind of drama to get people's attention, you know? So I don't think that's a typical drama that you see, but what I love about that show is the thinking that comes across. For example, they talk about, you know, why this market just doesn't make sense, or why your product has no legs, or, you know, you come here with such a low sales numbers and you want to, you think you can do, you know, 500,000 next year, and all those things kind of are real, right? So
okay.
The business thinking behind what they're telling you is quite real. For example, if Damien has access to manufacturing, you know, fabric or clothing manufacturing, I mean, that makes a huge difference. Someone has access to that kind of channel, and he knows how to build, you know, retail brands. I mean, you know, that he has been through that many times, right? Or, or the other person who has been through licensing model quite a bit, especially starting with toy licensing and whatnot. I mean, he understands, you can see him gravitate towards everything licensing, but the guy, you know, gravitates towards a lot of, you know, software type of environment because that's where he comes from. And again, you can start seeing kind of that flavor, you know, of their domain expertise coming into their discussion as well. But my net for their show is that, you know, a lot of the cutting edge discussion that happens in there about the business model and the market and, you know, finding the right product for the right market and if it has the right value proposition or not, I think people mm-hmm. should pay real attention to that because that's the real stuff for any investor. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Let's dive in more, a little deeper in your book real quick. Let's go through your slides, kind of do a highlight, and then we can recap. You talked about the steps of going to an angel investor, Mia, for a venture capitalist, an investor, Mia, angel, super invest, Mia, super angel, and so forth, institutional round, and venture capitalist. But let's go talk about the slides real quick and the contents of the book. I think you have a table of contents. You have, I think, between 14 or a little bit more than past 14 chapters. But these people you kind of interview one-on-one, or you just took their case studies and try to put your book together?
So there are 35 interviews, and the short story of this book is that we have the research effort underway that is looking at 100 top startup successes of all times, and what new startups and emerging startups as well as small businesses can learn from these successes. So we interviewed around 60 top venture capitalists and entrepreneurs behind those 100 startups. And then for this book, we picked 35 interviews that covers around 70 top startups. And so mm-hmm. you will find 35 chapters. Each of them is in interview fashion, but really talks about specific companies, everything from YouTube to Facebook to PayPal, you know, Twitter, all of the top companies that you can think of, Groupon, you know, all of those companies are being talked about in the book. Yeah.
Okay.
And the structure we follow, and I think what readers will get out of this, and you know, of course, I'm sharing my presentations. All presentations I create, I just share freely, because I want entrepreneurs and small business owners to learn from it. And I think you'll find book is a great tool along the side where, you know, can go through. I think the most important part of the book, the way we have done it, is we wanted this to be a conversational interview where you as a reader will feel like you are sitting in the room as a fly on the wall and listening to conversation between two investors about how they invested, why they invested in companies like Facebook, what did it look like very early on, what got them comfortable when no one knew about Mark Zuckerberg, you know, or the founder of Twitter or any of those companies. And mm-hmm. it will give you some kind of insight into their thinking process, their psychology, and what kind of journey as an investor, as an entrepreneur, you will go through in building this kind of billion-dollar successes. And most importantly, you know, what we have done is we've kind of followed the model that we have developed, and which is, you know, take you through why you pick the market you pick to, you know, how do you build the right product for your customer, how do you test it out, how do you, and when do you get to the business model testing, how do you test out whether you should charge $5 for 10% of your customers or $1 for all of your customers, how do you land that kind of business model to iterative process so to make sure you're not overcharging or leaving money on the table. And then, you know, at the end, when do you know it's time to sell? You know, do you keep building it, or you see the market has capped out and market is getting crowded? Is this the right time to come out of your business, sell it to someone, go do something else or not, or, you know, make a big $90 billion, you know, Google out of it, or whatever that may be, right? So it follows a very methodical structure through every interview, but you'll find colors of answers on entire spectrum. So even the same question being answered by different investors, depending on what situations they were in, you'll find a different flavor of the answer. But in aggregate, you know, if you read through this interview, it will tell you, if you were to think of in a new market or an existing market, disrupting an existing market, in aggregate, how will this knowledge gain from, you know, tens and tens of years of this VC master's experience can play into your particular case. And this is where I think the book holds a lot of value for you as a reader, you know. Yeah.
Okay. I noticed in your presentation, you have a lot of social media in here in this portfolio. A venture capitalist, I guess, as we go into this really this past decade, they have a better sense of the impact of social media. Is that the case, or they just not making a crapshoot, but as mainly as they understand it now, hey, this is what we know about this industry. We know this is going to work, and that's why we're gearing towards it. What are their point of view? Because this is a lot of social media that, on the slide that...
Yeah, good question. And in part to do with my personal experience in their area as well. But I think most importantly, if you dial back to 1950s, you know, you will see that there is a specific pattern in how these innovations come about. And mm-hmm. there are elements that need to come in place for an innovation to ride on that embedded platform. And so it's really a platform building on top of the platform kind of theory. But go back to 1950s when, you know, transistors came about, you know, and then someone figured how to put transistors on a chipset, and this gave rise to a company like Intel. And then you can put chipsets together, you know, in a very small fashion. Now, just in a very small form factor, that gave rise to PC trend, and that gave rise to companies like Apple and Microsoft. And then PCs got embedded, and you wanted to connect PC in a network environment, small within your enterprise. It gave rise to companies like, you know, the connecting the two different locations within your enterprise, you know, LAN network companies like 3Com, and eventually companies like Cisco, because you wanted to connect companies to other companies and communicate email between the companies, and you need a router to connect two companies together, right? And then this whole, you know, general internet network kind of got built out, and then it gave rise to the whole 1990s internet, you know, kind of frenzy where so many great companies were created out of their time, everything from Amazon to eBay to Netscape. And now we are seeing, you know, that getting embedded with broadband penetration. Now we're seeing smartphone is getting embedded as a platform, and Facebook itself is getting embedded as a platform on companies like $10 billion companies like Zynga were created. So it is not really a crapshoot, but really this is how the innovations follow, where you look at and say, now if every other person will have a smartphone becomes a de facto platform, and it has that data pipe coming into every smartphone, you know, with that, what can you do with that platform, right? And what
Absolutely.
Kind of service can you build on it? And that's what you got to look at as a smart investor and a smart entrepreneur. You ask yourself, you know, is Twitter a platform now? Can you build a company on top of Twitter, you know?
Okay.
Is it embedded so widely? And I think that's what you look for. So right now what we are seeing is the social behavior is riding on these social platforms and communication platforms like smartphones, and we are using that to uncover a lot of inefficiency in human communication, in our relationships, in commerce, and it's really enabling us to remove all this inefficiency using those embedded platforms and tools. And this is why you're seeing so many great companies coming out of that right now. You know.
Okay. And the last question, what is more important? I think the success of the market and the team, and I think you touched on that earlier, some time on market, another section on team.
Yeah.
What is the most important regarding startup and success?
No, again, great question. And I, when I asked the question to one of the interviewees, the funny answer was, what is more important, to breathe in or to breathe out, right? And I think you need both, otherwise you're going to just die. And that's what it is, really. You need a great market colliding with a great team, and both need to play out in a locked steps to create a great company. I mean, you know, there are examples on both sides of great team attacking an average market and couldn't go anywhere. And, you know, we have seen a number of serial entrepreneurs kind of wanting to repeat the past success is not able to do it because they were just walking into a great market with their 10,000 hours when that market was just getting ready to take off, and they magically arrived at the right point at the right time. Now, you know, you can, very few people can be that lucky to be able to do multiple times. So, and we have other sides of examples where there were great markets, and Google is a great example. When Google entered the market, there were it was 99th search engine. It wasn't the first search engine. And asked Jeeves to look smart to all of those guys, kind of were crazily trying to monetize, but Google figured the better way to search is to give people relevance and give people a very fast response back and optimize using the PageRank algorithm. So it was a very smart team attacking a huge market. Even if there were a number of players already in there, they were able to become number one. So I think, you know, and this again goes to the original question of what VCs look for. I think this is why it's so important for you to have that original passion to solve a problem you are so close to. And,
wow.
And you arrive to that problem through authenticity of your 10,000 hours, that you become a unique person to understand fine nuances of that market and your customer pain and how best to solve it. And I think that cross-section will lead you to success.
Absolutely. And to close out real quick, what books small businesses, as they're going through their stages, it's a must-read. Besides your book, of course, that's a must-read. But along as they go through this journey from Invest Me, from angel investor, from super investor, that kind of can guide them in the background. Yeah, we have something on management, we have something on marketing, but this part to help grow your business and take you to that next level, what books you recommend along with your book that they need to kind of read in stages to get them where they need to be so they don't have to stumble and fall and deal with a lot of issues as they go through this process?
No, good. Yeah, I mean, I do recommend a couple of books written by my fellow author, and most of them are venture capitalists. One book is called Getting to Plan B by Randy Komisar of Kleiner Perkins, and he has interviewed in my book as well. Another one is Lean Startup by Eric Ries that talks about how do you iterate, you know, which is very fast, and how do you operate with smallest amount of capital to get to product market fit. Very good read. And then, yeah, those are a couple of books I definitely recommend for the readers. And there are a number of blogs they can go to, from TechCrunch to GigaOM to Both Sides of the Table, but they'll find a lot of advice directly from the venture capitalists and the publishers who cover venture capital. Yeah.
Okay. And the blogs they can go to as well, do you know any offhand?
Yeah, the one I talked about, TechCrunch, is one.
Okay.
GigaOM is another one, and then Both Sides of the Table, yeah.
Great, perfect. And if they're looking for a angel investor, of course, you say stay to your local community. You mentioned earlier there was a list they can get that from.
Yeah, there's one. The couple I really like, one is called Kickstarter.
Okay.
And the other one is Angel List.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, just heard about it, and a lot of those coming up. And once you find few and then you kind of Google it out, you'll find several others similar to those. It's called CrowdTilt, CrowdTilt. But then, again, there are a lot of new flavors coming out, so you may want to figure out which one you want to be part of. You know.
Great. Really appreciate you coming on to the program, giving us this wealth of information. It was so much information. I'm glad that people just go ahead and send their questions to me a lot easier because we'll be able to focus on all of your wealth of knowledge. Your book is awesome. I'm going to get your book, and I'm going to put this information on our website to let them know how to get it and so forth. I appreciate you coming to the program, and any closing words you'd like to leave these little small businesses and mid-sized businesses who want to take themselves in for to the next level?
Wonderful. Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely recommend you to read the book because it's not just me talking about my knowledge, but we gather knowledge from 35 top people in the industry. So you definitely want to take this, put this on your coffee table or desktop and read it. And the best piece of advice I give to any entrepreneur is that you really got to look inside yourself. Fill it out what you feel truly passionate about, and don't let anyone tell you can't do it. Just go do it. Yeah.
Right, go do it. Again, thank you, Torrin Shaw. Your book, I appreciate it, Venture Capitalist at Work. Thank you for coming on to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Hopefully we can have you back sometime in the future.
Yes, sure. Cheers.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you again. I appreciate it. Again, it's another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this show on iTunes, Podfeed, Podcast, or on Blog Talk Network. Also, you can listen to the show at 9 a.m. On WFAB. Thank you for listening to the program, and take care. Have a great day. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.